welcome to another episode of the Men's Wear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Booker, and today we're going to be talking to Pierre-Yves Monneville, who is the founder of Monneville, and that website, monneville.co, is where you can find all the information and a little snippet about Monneville. They are timeless basics. They design ethical athleisure menswear, combining functionality and sleek minimalist design for a confidence-boosting fit. Locally produced in small batches with organic cotton in West London. And here to tell the story in his own words is Pierre Yves.
My name is Pierre. I live in Brighton, and I launched the brand Monneville in December of 2020. It's a brand of ethical athleisure menswear. And we design athleisure style clothes that are very much inspired by sportswear and by rugby jerseys, especially at the moment. And then we use organic cotton that is made in the UK, and the garments are made themselves in West London in very small batches. That's about it, really.
And so what transferable skills did you have in your past, Pierre, to bring to the brand? Were you a designer in your former life? How does it work?
Yes and no. So I came to fashion in a very roundabout way. So first of all, let's go even before that. The reason I moved to the UK about 17 years ago now was because I got a job as a cabin crew. And so I stayed as cabin crew for 17 years. During those 17 years, I went back to university to study industrial design. So I finished, I think I graduated about 3 years ago. Then when I was doing my final year project, I was wondering what I would do with my industrial design degree. And then, so there was a very strong emphasis on sustainability. Then my project was a shower timer made of plastic hemp. Then when I researched hemp, I saw that there were hundreds of uses for hemp, including fabric. And then it clicked. Then I thought, I'm going to use my industrial design degree to make clothes, to make sustainable clothes. Because even before, as a child, I wanted to be a fashion designer because I was brought up by a seamstress. And the only thing is, when I was seven, I realized I couldn't draw.
It's harder than it looks, isn't it?
Well, especially for me. And then another thing happened. Then the fashion I saw on TV was really the haute couture for, you know, expensive ball gowns for women. And already then, I couldn't really see myself doing that. So very quickly, I just I changed my mind. I thought, well, like, it's not going to work because I can't draw, and it's not really, you know, I don't want to design clothes just for women to wear at cocktail parties or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I still wanted to do it because I remember, I think when I was 13 already, I made some samples of something that looks like I was already doing some samples of clothes, and I was already, you know, thinking of which logo I would have and all these kind of things. And once again, because I realized that I still couldn't draw when I was 13, and then at the time I had discovered photography. So after my, you know, the French equivalent of the A-levels, I trained as a photographer. And then because of mental health issues, I just couldn't really go ahead with the photography and push it forward to sustain a career in photography. So that's why I ended up leaving France. And that's why I came to the UK and had a day job for 17 years. And now finally I'm allowing myself to do what I want.
Nice. Okay. Well, talk to me a little bit about the brand, how it is today, and or maybe just backpedal slightly. How did you raise the capital to get it off the ground? Was it a crowdfunder or was it your own money?
So it was a bit of both. So there was my own money for the very first stages of sampling. And in the meantime, I also applied for some funding for fashion startups, which was granted about 6 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
So
where do you go for that? So who funds the fashion startups? Is it government or is it private equity or?
No, it's actually funds from the European Union.
So Pierre, I'm just imagining 1,000-odd people right now listening to the podcast, all wanting to start their own brand and going, well,
yes,
who do I write to? So what do these people need to type into Google apart from European Union?
Well, it's called New Enterprise Allowance. That's what it's called. And then, that's what it's called.
Ah, okay, great. I never knew anything about that. So that's great. I mean, a good place to start, I suppose, if you're wanting to get some support to get something like this off the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you say that everything is produced, or the garments are made here in the UK. How important is that for you to have everything kind of homegrown here? Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I really believe that we all need a job, really. And in Europe especially, there are so many people who spend their lives training for a job they're really proud of, but so many of them can't do that job anymore because the production has been moved to Southeast Asia or the Paris in general. So and they're fantastic at their job and they're really skilled.
Yeah.
So it's important to maintain those skills and to give jobs to these people and to give them some work to do.
And whereabouts in the UK do they make t-shirts like these?
So the clothes are made in West London in Twickenham.
Ah, okay. Not far from me. Oh, and also the sustainability thread. I mean, you touched upon it briefly, but if you go onto the website, which I encourage people to do, by the way, and we'll leave links over on the show notes, but monoville.co, it's not just kind of like you tick the box, we do sustainable clothing. There's a whole kind of like a stream of consciousness about why we should be all very conscious about what we're wearing and where we're sourcing, effects on the environment, but you know, just new facts and also links to other kind of documentaries like The Guardian, other places where people can kind of come and immerse themselves in getting well read on this subject. But maybe you can touch upon why it's so important to you and why you felt the need to get this information out into the world.
So I've always been interested in sustainability. When I was a child, it was called ecology. So I've always been careful with environment and, you know, I've always tried, you know, not to kill insects for nothing or all these kind of things. And then in 2013, after me getting a divorce and then my mother had died, I think the year before, then I felt really lost. So I decided to go to Peru on an ayahuasca retreat. And that, I thought that would transform my life, and even more than that.
Get some good Tinder profile pics. Like, I know what you're thinking. Top of Machu Picchu. This guy's going to be irresistible.
Exactly. And during one of the ceremonies, I really felt in my body that, you know, I'm not separate from the environment. I am part of the environment. So, it was so strong and so clear, really, that everything was connected. And as a species, we're just one link of a massive chain, really. So since then, I was already studying by then, but I really decided that no matter what I would do, it had to be sustainable, as sustainable as I could do it. And I never look back, really.
Nice. It feels like a very spiritual place to come to, your website, Pierre. I mean, it's not just talking about the ethos of sustainability, but there's also links to music, you know, things that you listen to in your past and things that kind of get you into the right mood right now. And I think that's quite a refreshing thing to see on websites, because it kind of gives you an insight or a window into the people behind it. It gives a site a personality. So was it a website you built yourself? Was that always the intent?
Yeah. So it took me, I work with different mentors. So there's a fashion mentor, there's a business mentor, there are other, marketing people. But I always try to remember that at the end of the day, it's my vision and it's my experience. So that's why, you know, it's very important for me to share music. Because as I write on the on some of the pages, you know, I spend so much time alone as a child that music was my companion. So it really inspired people. It inspired me and continues to inspire me.
Nice. Well, people can go over and check out some of the playlists that you got over there. KLF, Justified and Ancient. I learned that. That was one of the very first songs I learned on the keyboard back in the day.
Yeah. Well, that was a song I used to listen, that I used to play on the radio in France. They used to play it every single Friday night. I used to love it.
Oh, no, good, some good strong picks. So what's next for you now? Well, actually, tell me about your day job now, Pierre. I mean, how much time do you spend on the business, in the business? You know, maybe you can just walk me through your 9-to-5, if there is such a thing for you.
Yeah. Well, so I left flying last year. At the beginning of, well,
just in time. Just in time.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought that was the universe. That was a sign of that was a sign. I just thought, oh, you know what? Actually, what happened is I think the first lockdown was in March, wasn't it?
Do you know, it's all a big old blur this last year and a half, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, because I remember I was very cocky at the time. And no, in March, I had a trip to Hong Kong. And at the time, it was the COVID virus was only in Asia. And I remember thinking, it's only over there. So I remember having a mask when I was going out, but it was mainly out of politeness, because I didn't want to offend anybody, and I just thought, you know, maybe they're overreacting, until, you know, we all know what happened afterwards. But then when the lockdown was announced here, I remember feeling so overwhelmed, and I felt like I was in, you know, an episode of the Twilight Zone, or Black Mirror for a newer reference. And when I'm lost, I always go on the beach to think. And I remember thinking, oh my God, what if this lasts a week or two? What are you going to do? And then I thought to myself, well, you know, I've been meaning to stop flying for a long time. So this might be a sign that, you know, it's time to go and do what I really want.
Yeah.
And so as soon as the announcements came for like voluntary redundancy and all of that, I thought, that's it, I'm off.
Nice. Yeah, they didn't have to ask you twice.
Oh no,
you're already out the door.
I'm really grateful though.
So were you working like on the planes when people were, even passengers were masked up? Did you kind of get to see that stage? And was this like the kind of crazy level for you where you're, I mean, so I haven't been flying, I don't think, having to mask up. I don't think I've done that. But I mean, we hear all the time people would have to wear masks and then they'd be able to eat something. And then in between nibbles and bites, they'd have to put the mask back on and stuff like that.
Yeah, at the time, I don't know what it's like now, but then, yes. And my very last flight was to India, and the government asked us to, you know, wear aprons and visors. I mean, it was, and we even had like a, I've got no hair, but we still had to wear something over our heads to protect as much as possible when we were doing, you know, when we were in the cabin, and even walking through the airport, and gloves on. I mean, it was like really dramatic.
Wow. And that must have been, was that quite hard to regulate as well? Because it's not easy flying half the time and getting half the people to kind of mask up and, you know, behave themselves. I bet that was just a miserable time all around to be on a plane.
Actually, well, I never had a problem. So, and I was never on flights where people, you know, argued or there were no problem. And I don't know what it's like now, again, but the flights I was working on then, they were really quiet, really, really quiet.
Oh, okay.
Well, so it was, so even if they didn't want to put a mask on, then, you know, because we were, I mean, we were talking maybe 20 passengers maximum on a long haul plane.
Right. Did you do any first class? Do you tend to anyone in first class, business class and the like?
Business class mostly.
Okay. Because my girlfriend and I have got a theory about cabin crew in business class.
So what is it?
So the best thing that a passenger can do is get on a plane and go to sleep straight away, because then he's low maintenance, right? No maintenance. Like, hello sir, here's your pajamas, here's your blanket, let me just turn that light off.
See you later.
But if we're in business class, the last thing we want to see is where to turn the light off. We want a cocktail in our hands, like in the next 5 minutes or so. So the conflict is always between the cabin crew and the passengers that want to stay up all night and get on the cocktails, and the cabin crew that go, do you know what, this is an overnight flight, I'd rather you just now watch the back of your eyelids and then I can have a much easier day at the office.
Yeah, that's right.
Got it. Great. Yeah, told you, babe. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Tell me a little bit about what's happening next now with the brand. We've got some t-shirts on the store that I encourage everyone to check out. Once again, we'll leave links over in the show notes. We've got three different colorways going on. Are we going to be focusing on any more garments, any more designs? What's next?
Oh yeah. They're on the works already. So the reason I was advised actually is to start really small, which is what I'm doing. So that's why there is only one garment, which is called Urban Jersey. And the reason I'm starting so small is, first of all, because at the end of the day, I don't want to waste money and resources. And I still, as much as I put all my heart and soul in it, but it still has to be on the market. So I still have to see whether people respond to it or not. Then in the meantime, there are already the next product sample, the next colorways sampled. And the other thing is I would really like to get some feedback from customers to see what they like, what they don't like, and then keep improving on Urban Jersey.
Great. Well, I got to tell you, I really like the site. I even sent it to a friend of mine, the idea that you can just sign up and be in with a shout of winning a t-shirt. So that's, you know, because I do have a little bugbear with kind of pop-ups on sites, as I'm sure we all do, where you just kind of want to get to where you go to, but then you see a pop-up like subscribe to this and you get 10% off, which doesn't feel like anything, you know. But to see a pop-up that comes up and go, you're in with a chance of winning one of the t-shirts for 100 odd so. And then
you actually, you're winning two. You're winning one for you and one for your friends.
There you go, you see.
Now Now you want to sign up.
You definitely. And I loved it. And my mate even says, I'm in, because that's a little thing that you click on. But perfect. Great idea. And
thank you.
Again, you know, people know where to go now. So are you still doing your own photography?
Yes.
So it looked like that was some of that was shot down in London by Canary Wharf, that little mound by the back of the tube.
Ah, well, yeah, yes, it was. Yeah,
London boys talking. No.
Because what I wanted was an urban environment, and I also wanted to represent. I want. It, in my mind, who I design for is an urban man. So to me, my idea of urban environment is very much Canary Wharf with glass buildings and all this kind of, and just a bit of green, just a bit of greenery, but a lot of glass buildings.
Yeah, you got to be careful down there, because when I went down to take some photos, just kind of like fly on the wall photos, I had someone come up to me and goes, you know, you're not allowed to take photos down here because they think that you're kind of taking photos of buildings. You know, these are kind of highly protected buildings, I suppose, and they have their own security, and you're just not allowed to come down willy-nilly and just take photos of buildings. So. Well done on getting the shoot.
I could see there were some security watching over us. But they didn't come and they didn't come and, you know, asked us what we were doing, or but we were also quite quick, really.
Yeah. I think you have to be in that neck of the woods.
Yeah. Well, and also what we were doing, you know, it was nothing to be, you know, arrested over.
Yeah. They're not going to kick you out of town for that. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Pierre. Enjoyed our little chat. Great to get to know you. Great to get to know the brand. And like I say, people should head over there and support local businesses, homegrown talent, and also get schooled up on sustainability, because it's all in the text over there. In the meantime, wish you all the best.
Thank you.
I hope to speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pierre. And the website, monoville.co, well worth checking out. Thanks for coming on, Pierre. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, why not leave us a review? It does help support the show and helps it stay free. And if you want to check out the show notes, all the other articles on lifestyle, fashion, watches and more, do check out menswearstyle.co.uk, on the social also at menswearstyle. Thanks again, everyone. Until next time.